Glad you're with us here on the 180. We are queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Pleased to be joined by friend of the show and world-renowned infectious disease expert, Dr. Bill Schaffner from Vanderbilt University Medical Center, who joins us, well, he didn't join us last week. I nearly said weekly, but quite often to discuss COVID-19 and coronavirus. Doctor, great to see you as always. Hope you're doing well.
Doing well. Here I am. Let's go.
All right, let's hit it. Where is your optimism now from where it was 2 weeks ago when you last joined us, seeing the number of positive cases climb at the current rate?
Oh, you hear me sigh. My optimism is being stretched. It's being challenged because all over the country, we're seeing cases increase. Cases are increasing here in Nashville. We're holding our own at the moment with hospitalizations, but nonetheless, cases will turn into hospitalizations. And so I'm worried. I'm worried about this weekend and how careful or careless people will be, frankly.
Go a layer deeper, if you will, on the hospitalizations, because you've told us and we've paid attention to that number compared to the positive case number. You mentioned Nashville is holding steady right now. Maybe you don't expect it to stay steady, but where is it nationally? Where are we as a community compared to the national numbers?
I think we're, from the point of view of hospitalizations, doing well because I think we are holding steady. You know, there are little ups and downs, but we've been pretty steady. Whereas there's some other communities, Houston most notoriously, that's had an awful lot of hospitalizations, and they're now stretching their intensive care unit beds. So we don't want that to happen here.
Doctor, based on what you're seeing right now with the numbers, any consideration for going back in phases with the reopening of the economy, or is it let's keep it in phase three and then maybe go slower into phase four at some point? How do you see that based on the numbers you're seeing?
Well, you know, here in Nashville, we've taken a baby step back. We now have a mayor's declaration through the Board of Health that we are obliged to all wear masks outside, and the bars have been closed. And so that is a partial step back, and we don't want to get back any more than that.
I wanted to ask you about Houston. This is something we talked about yesterday. There was a Houston Health Department or a Houston health official that tweeted out, you know, it had been such a big story that Houston's hospital capacity was being stretched. But a Houston official said, we're always stretched. I mean, Houston is a big hospital town, obviously, a big cancer treatment town. Hutton, you have a clarification to that point?
Yeah, it was a doctor from Houston Methodist who said, while the numbers are, the reports are 97% of the hospital beds are full, he clarified and said last year at this exact, in this exact month, June 2019, they were at 95% capacity. So I don't know whether, I mean, it's not good when a hospital is at 95% capacity, but can you explain, I think what Paul's getting to, what's the 2% represent?
It doesn't seem like it's a COVID thing for Houston when last year it was this similar.
Well, I haven't seen their data specifically. I've just heard the reports that their beds and indeed their intensive care unit beds are stretched. Lots of big hospitals are often at near capacity across this country because we haven't expanded our hospital capacity as rapidly as we've expanded the population. But also in Houston, they've been talking about COVID disproportionately affecting the disadvantaged population down there. That's also something we need to keep an eye on.
Texas and Florida, more broadly, were pretty aggressive about reopening. And now we're seeing them, along with Arizona, as maybe the three states that are currently in the worst shape in terms of where the numbers are trending. Do you attribute that from what you're looking at in terms of the data to reopening too quickly or maybe too carelessly?
A little of both, Paul. I think that most of us in public health think that we opened up a little early. And, you know, I think the population, just general folks, were never clearly told when we open up, we're going to have to continue to wear masks, social distancing, avoiding large groups. that was never emphasized. It was always waiting to open up. And then when we did, big surprise. A lot of people went out and didn't wear masks.
We got some questions coming in on Twitter, and you can use the hashtag Dr. Bill to ask your questions. Ricky writes in and says, Tennessee is 12 days into the increase of cases, but no big increase in deaths. Has the virus lost strength, or is it simply who is being infected? If after a couple more weeks of no increase in deaths, will this impact moving forward towards normalcy?
Well, it's great that the deaths haven't increased so far, and we think it's a combination of things. More younger people are getting infected. That's really quite obvious. A lot of increased cases in younger people, they tend to get less sick. And also, frankly, we're getting better at treating the patients who do get sick. We know more about how COVID makes us sick, and we can anticipate that. And now we have two drugs, remdesivir, dexamethasone, and also convalescent plasma that we can use to treat patients. So I think the treatment side is also getting better. And yes, obviously, deaths will be a factor in thinking as we go forward, not the only factor.
How much more have we learned about what happens if you've had it in terms of getting rid of it, getting it out of your system, and the potential for it to get it again, or for it to actually stay with you?
So, Paul, we're learning a lot. We're learning more that some patients actually have lingering symptoms for a long period of time, and that's just being defined. Number two, we do know that for a period of time after you get better, you can still excrete the virus. But virus that's alive probably is not there after 10 days, although the test can be positive, and that's just viral remnants, just fragments. And so we're learning more about that. So as you can imagine, we've learned a lot about acute illness. Now that people are recovering, we're learning more about the long-term effects.
How many cases are there where the same individual has contracted COVID-19 for a second time?
Oh, I meant to address that. So thanks for asking. I think that number at the moment is zero. I have not seen a clear single case report of where somebody had documented COVID, got better, well documented, and then had a second infection. So that bodes well so far.
Strictly from a COVID-19 perspective, which is what we ask you about, Doctor, when you see the news with the TSSAA and the state of emergency being extended to August 29th, so their season now is delayed. It was supposed to start August 20th. There's proposals out there to either start the season on September 25th and go later and closer to Christmas, or to start the season sometime in February. Just from the infectious disease part of this, what would your recommendation be right now when you look at the numbers as to how they should proceed?
I'm not sure I can flip that coin and go either way. I could make both arguments. I think everybody is in a tough circumstance, particularly with contact sports. Cross country, I'm not so worried about. Tennis, I'm not so worried about. But it's the contact sports that have everybody concerned. We're going to learn a lot as students come back to college. There'll be a lot of testing initially, and we'll see what proportion of the general student body, let alone the athletes, is positive.
Dr. Bill Schaffner with us. I'm curious to get your take on the reports that the NBA will be wearing what they're calling a COVID ring that can reportedly detect symptoms 2 days before a player would potentially show symptoms. At least that's what this report a couple of weeks ago stated. And also the lingering rumors that the NFL is coming up with some type of saliva test that will give not immediate results, but fairly quick results to find out if someone has symptoms of COVID-19. Have you looked into both of those?
So the COVID ring is fascinating. It's a bit of technology that monitors your bodily function, your pulse, and particularly your temperature. And so if your temperature starts to go up, this COVID ring apparently will be able to determine that, and that information might be a sign that you're actually going to get infected down the road. Remind me of the second question.
The saliva test.
Oh, yes.
Is that being developed?
Sure. There are a lot of different tests that are being developed, and not only a little swab in the front of the nose, but also the saliva test. The trick with all these tests is exactly how accurate they are. Do they give you a lot of false negatives? In other words, the person's really positive, but the test comes out negative. That's the question that's always very, very important.
More questions coming in on Twitter. DB writes, Dr. Bill, do you believe that percentage of cases testing positive is a useful metric? And if so, why is the emphasis typically in the media on number of overall cases? As a CDC advisor, is there any way to influence and increase usage of this metric specifically for Nashville and in the state of Tennessee?
I can tell you for sure that Nashville watches the proportion of people, the percent of tests that are positive, very, very closely, as does everybody. It's one of an important metric. If you're testing a lot of people and the percentage of those that are positive is going up, one of two things: the virus is spreading much more in the community, or you're now testing a high-risk population. The percentage will go up if you go into nursing homes, for example, prisons, or large manufacturing facilities, meatpacking plants, for example. So the percentage will go up. You have to be careful about who's being tested in order to evaluate those results.
World-renowned infectious disease expert from Vanderbilt University Medical Center, Dr. Bill Schaffner, with us on 104.5 The Zone.
You're on the NCAA's advisory panel. We haven't talked to you since you last met with that group. What's the latest emphasis or topic that's being discussed there?
So one of the topics you'll smile is behavior at the sidelines in football games, because you know players take off their helmets and perhaps their plexiglass shields that may be built into those helmets, and then coaches come up to them very, very closely and talk to them right in the sidelines, often in a very intense way. And the question is that sort of behavior going to have to change? If we're trying to keep to some 6-foot distancing, will coaches have to use sign language or something to communicate with their players? So that's one of the issues that coaches certainly are debating at the present time.
More questions coming in on Twitter. This is an interesting one that I've not thought about. Dr. Bill, do you see a parallel between the current debate of the, quote, right to not wear a mask as similar to the public health debate as the right to smoke in public 20 years ago? Is COVID-19 the new secondhand smoke with much quicker, more dangerous consequences?
Actually, those two things are very similar, because it doesn't have to do just with yourself. It has to do with your behavior affecting people around you. And that's very, very important. Another analogy I like to make is that we all agree to go on the green and stop on the red. If somebody wants to express themselves as an individual and go on the red, they hazard themselves, but also everybody around them. So it's not just about your right to do what you want when you're in a group and you're dealing with a communicable, a contagious disease.
Tip on Twitter asks, what's the accuracy of the test giving? And this is something that I've seen in the media where there's a lot of people disputing the accuracy of the test. From your experience, doctor, has it gotten better as we've gone along in terms of accurate readings on positive or negative COVID-19 tests?
Yes, it's clearly gotten better, but we have to be very careful. There are different kinds of tests, and they have inherently different accuracies. That nasal swab test that goes up very high and is uncomfortable, that's by far the most accurate. The nasal swab in the front of the nose is not so bad. It gets pretty close to that. And now people are evaluating the saliva test and see whether it can approach the accuracy of the other two.
I've seen claims that the antibody test is fairly inaccurate. Is that statement accurate? Are we seeing a lot of false tests return with going one way or the other with the antibody test?
Remember, the antibody tests, that's a blood test to see whether you've been infected in the past. And presumably now you're protected, you're immune. The early antibody tests were really junky. The currently licensed tests that are coming more widely available are much, much more accurate, I'm glad to say.
Those who have updated their iPhone recently may have noticed the update with the COVID-19 exposure logging that's now being installed on Apple devices. What exactly have they installed on my phone, and how is it going to be helpful?
That's a question I can't help you with. I'll try to find out a little bit more about that. Sorry.
There's an app that's attached to it. That's all I know. You have to download another app to get it to work, and it's supposed to send you alerts. But again, brand new. And that was something that one of my friends pointed out on my phone last night, actually.
Oh, Paul? Gotta find out
one of the popular combative, I'm not going to wear a mask, things that I see on social media anyway, is you're not getting the same degree of oxygen, which seems ridiculous to me when I consider how many hospital workers, doctors, nurses, and others wear masks for long stretches and the majority of their days. Could you spell out for our audience what exactly a mask does and does not do to a healthy person breathing through it?
Sure. The mask provides protection that goes both ways. And one of the things we've learned is it provides even greater protection going in than we thought. And it clearly protects people around you. It does not notably change your oxygen concentration. Healthcare workers everywhere have used them for a long time. That's a trope.
Healthcare workers have used these cloth masks?
Oh, they have used masks that are much tighter and more secure than the cloth masks. They're called N95 respirators. You wear those for a while, and I assure you, the work of breathing is harder because it absolutely obliges you to go in and out through the fabric almost 100%. And we can wear those. The cloth masks and the surgical masks aren't that tight. So those are the masks, those cloth and surgical masks that are used by the public. They're not going to impede you in your breathing, certainly if you're a normal, healthy person.
So in reading the governor's state of emergency declaration and the provision of the mask wearing in Nashville, there is something that's outlined that says you wear a mask unless there's a medical reason preventing you from doing it. What would an example be of a medical reason preventing you from wearing a mask that you could see?
Well, there are people who have really diminished lung function, and those people may indeed, the work of breathing is a little bit harder when you wear a mask, and that may impair them just from getting around and being comfortable wearing a mask. Of course, those folks shouldn't be getting out very often. They should be really sheltering at home a lot to avoid exposure to the virus, because if they get infected, they're going to get very seriously ill.
Doctor, are you optimistic that the sports leagues that are trying to play and resume play within a bubble will be able to pull this off?
You know, I don't like to use that four-letter word safe because we can't assure complete safety. It'll work, sort of, and it'll, you know, I wonder how sustained it will be over time. That's the big issue. I think everything we do reduces the risk. These bubble schemes are very elaborate. They really shelter the people who are playing and everybody else who works with them but they're going to have to interact with, for example, hotel staff around the edges. There will be some people within the bubble who want to go home and visit their family or girlfriends or whatever, you know. So it will be an imperfect bubble. And the question is, how sustained can it be over time?
And just to clarify, because we haven't asked in a while, I believe it was the CDC about a month ago said that it's not likely to be spread on surfaces. Mm-hmm. It's more, you know, in the air. So is that still the case even after another few weeks here of studies?
Yes, exactly. It's less likely. I think the surfaces, I think, as we have said before, are a little side street of transmission. The highway of transmission is close personal contact within 6 feet, often indoors. So that's really how this virus is spread in the great majority of times. I think we have to be a little less concerned, thankfully, of the inanimate environment, surfaces.
What do you need to see personally to advise, for instance, Mayor Cooper or Governor Lee to move forward into phase four? What do you hope happens here in the next several weeks? What would Dr. Schaffner tell them?
Oh, I would wait to do that until the curve actually starts going down. Before then, I think we need to mark time where we are, and if anything, expand mask use even beyond Nashville. I mean, we're at a critical juncture now. None of us in medicine or public health are eager to get into phase four. Let's get phase three really under control and give ourselves some confidence that the population understands and is with us, that these constraints, this mask wearing, for example, it will go on for quite a while.
Do you anticipate the northeast of the United States to continue to go down? It's leveled off, it appears.
It has, and we'll wait and see. They've had an awful lot of experience. Their population, I think, is more trained, and so they're with the program. And we'll just, I hope their experience spreads, obviously, across the country.
Dr. Bill Schaffner, always a great visit, and it always flies by. News that we can certainly use. Thank you so much, and a busy schedule for you to fit some time in for us, and hopefully we'll chat next week.
My plan, too. Good.
Take care.
Dr. Bye-bye. Bill Schaffner from Vanderbilt University Medical Center, always a fascinating visit, and I love the way he explains things each and every time he joins us.
Terrific.